on Land Use, March 23rd, 2005. We will open a public hearing on House Bill 2668. Committee at approximately 2:20 this afternoon. We will stand at ease until 3 p.m. and then come back at 3 o'clock. Okay. Hereby open the public hearing on House Bill 2668. Sam?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, the House Bill 2668 is one which proposes to allow a county to vacate interior lot lines affecting private property without requiring a public hearing if the abutting property owners and those who are affected by the vacation agree to it, and it does not violate any of the local zoning requirements that it would the planning director would then make a findings that it complies, and then it would be forwarded to the Board of Commissioners or the governing body of that jurisdiction supporting the vacation.
This is Representative Morgan's bill, and she's involved in another committee this afternoon, so she was asked, I think it's Phil Steinbeck from Douglas County to come up.
Chair Garrard and Commissioners, greetings from Douglas County. My name is Phil Stenbeck. I'm a senior long-range planner with the Douglas County Planning Department. I'm here today in support of HB 2668. This is a request coming from the Douglas County Board of Commissioners. What we have found is in ORS 368-351, there are some requirements for lot lines between properties under the same ownership that we're trying to address through changes to ORS 368-351. Currently, there are processes available, depending on what the scenario is, that can remove the lot line. The three processes are a boundary line adjustment, a subdivision replat, or a vacation of the lot line. Testimony here, I'll just quickly mention that the first process, the boundary line adjustment process, typically takes 30 days. The replat, you're looking at a 60-day process, and a vacation, you're typically looking at a 90-day process. And there's also an increase in fees that a county such as Douglas County will charge to process an application of that nature. What we're proposing is, in certain scenarios, and it's the scenario where a landowner owns several units of land, commercially or industrially zoned, and wants to build a structure over the property lines between these units of land that have been legally created, that the landowner have the opportunity to use the land as one unit of land through an expedited process. In Douglas County, the process, you're looking at a process that may be 7 days long, turnaround time, no fee would be required, and ultimately the landowner then would not have to adjust the building code requirements for the property line that's been vacated. What you find is when you own land, say you own two parcels of land in the commercial zone, you can actually, based on the zoning, typically in a commercial zone, build right up to the property line. There's a zero setback requirement in most commercial zones. But what happens is, as you get closer to the property lines, the building code, the closer you get, the building code will then kick in, and there's things that you typically need to do in the area of fire requirements. And so what you're looking at is firewalls and things of that nature are no longer needed, which in many commercial and industrial buildings is, if you're building a restaurant or something like that, maybe isn't necessarily needed through the middle of your dining room area. The Douglas County Board of Commissioners requests the Land Use Committee's support for the proposed amendments. They would also like to thank you for your consideration of HB 2668, and also thank Representative Morgan and staff for their effort and support of this bill.
Any questions of Mr. Stenbeck?
Anderson.
Hi, I like this. Basically, it's going to ease up a lot of commercial industrial moving and make it a lot simpler, make it a lot faster, make it easier to site a business. Sounds like a pretty good move to me.
Any other questions?
Thank you, Mr. Steinberg. Chuck Parson.
Good afternoon, sir.
Good afternoon, Chair Gerard. Members of the community, my name is Chuck Pearson. I live at 11090 Southeast Windrock Drive in Happy Valley, Oregon. I just recently became aware of this bill, and I've spoken to the previous testifier. We support the concept. I'm a county surveyor, and I represent the Oregon Association of County Engineers and Surveyors. We do support the concept, but we're concerned that the cities are not included in this bill and that we should be having a single type of process for both cities and counties. So that's one concern. Another concern is that we have a subdivision plat with all these lots on it, and once this lot line is vacated, there's no requirement that any notice be placed, any constructive public notice be placed on the subdivision plat. That language is currently in ORS Chapter 271 dealing with city vacations. It's not in Chapter 368. A third concern is we need a definition of what this is. We previously had a Dalmatian dog. Tom Gallagher's going to kill me. We've taken the spots away. What is it now? So we need to decide whether it's going to be called lots 1-2 or some other designation. And the fourth concern that was just raised by the previous person was building over lot lines. Many times subdivision plats have easements that are granted along the front, side, and rear lot lines of subdivisions. There's no provision in here to vacate those easements along with the lot line. We'd be happy to work with the drafters of this proposal and come to a amicable solution. I think it can be worked out fairly easily, but just will take a little time. As I said, I just became aware of this bill this morning.
Chuck, are you indicating that these are basically wordsmithing things that have to be done, or are you talking about philosophically changing the intent of the bill?
Chair Gerard, members of the committee, I think that these are minor things that can be done to the bill and not a complete redraft of it, but we would include maybe another section or two in it to address these particular issues.
Any questions, Mr. Pearson?
Pearson, yes.
I apologize. Seeing none, thank you.
Thank you.
Appreciate your knowledge. Anyone else wish to speak on this bill? Representative Ackerman.
Yeah, could I ask one or two questions of Mr. Steinbeck? I've had a chance to review his letter, and I'm...
Mr. Steinbeck, would you come back up, please?
Just a couple of questions, Mr. Steinbeck. You mentioned in your memo that the approval of the proposed amendments to House Bill 2668 would eliminate the need to go through the three processes mentioned. I don't see that we have those amendments. Is there something coming that we don't have?
Pardon? In the bill, the proposed language gives the planning director the ability to implement an expedited vacation process. And so what I'm indicating is that expedited land use process that which is facilitated by 2668, where the planning director makes a determination
in some scenarios would be more effective a process than the other three options, depending on which one was an option.
I understand that, but when you use the word amendment, are you talking about the amendments that, to the statute, or are you contemplating new amendments coming forward?
This is the amendments to the statute as proposed.
And my other question is, the bill relates only to the vacation of property, and yet you say that the bill would eliminate the process for a lot line adjustment and a subdivision to subdivision replat. Am I reading that correctly?
For the scenario in the letter that I've submitted, there's a scenario there where it's focused on a landowner owning several units of land, and in that one scenario could possibly use the proposed process based on the amendments to expedite their needs. It doesn't replace or eliminate the replat, the lot line adjustment, or the vacation process. There's still many situations where those processes are still needed.
Okay, thank you.
Phil, do you feel that Mr. Pearson's suggestions are needed, or what are your feelings as far as having the bill amended?
Okay. The proposed bill comes from the point of view of the counties, from a county planner, from the Douglas County Board of Commissioners, and typically we're a little nervous trying to suggest ways of doing land use or other activities within city jurisdictions. In Douglas County, for instance, there's 12 cities, and those cities all have their own comprehensive plan amendment, comprehensive plan and zoning ordinance, and they oversee how their land use activities are done, and typically the Board of Commissioners gives them a lot of autonomy in terms of how processes are done. And in Douglas County also, though, you have four what are called urban unincorporated areas. These are areas where you have people living in an urban environment where there's a sewer and a water system, and they look like a city, feel like a city, but they don't have a city council, and they're under the county's jurisdiction, and that's where these proposed amendments would help facilitate development in some of those areas.
Okay. At this point, would this bill affect cities?
At this point, I don't see it affecting cities. Right now, it talks specifically to the county planning director's authority to facilitate the land use and development process in the county's jurisdiction.
Any further discussion?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. How would you deal with the easement problem?
Typically, easements are something that are addressed through if a landowner wants to vacate an easement, they need to contact the easement holder about vacation of that and follow through on that particular process. This is strictly aimed at and focused at the boundary line, which may or may not have easements, as was mentioned, along them.
Thank you, Phil. Thank you for sharing. Anyone else wish to testify on behalf of this bill?
Can't read who's ever writing. Pass me this.
Certainly, go ahead, Representative Green.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just like to welcome to committee some Girl Scouts from the Cedar Mill School in my district, and I met them outside and invited them to come in and see how the process actually works. So, welcome. I don't see
them. Okay, seeing no more further testimony on House Bill 2668, we will close the public hearing on 2668 and open a work session on House Bill 2668. Any comments, discussion of the bill? Chair would look for a motion.
I move we accept 2668 and move it to the floor with a new task recommendation.
Representative Greenlick moves House Bill 2668 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Seeing none, the clerk will call the roll.
Sackerman?
Aye.
Anderson?
Aye.
Greenlick?
Aye.
Nolan.
Aye.
Smith. Severin.
Aye.
Chair Gerard.
Chair votes aye. House Bill 2668 is moved to the floor with the due pass recommendation, and we'll name Representative Morgan the carrier on the bill. We will now open a public hearing on House Bill 2755.
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Committee, House Bill 2755 is moved. Which seeks to modify procedures relating to subdivision or partition of land, specifically those chapters, the sections. There's a number of changes in here, and in the SMS kind of went through the different main parts. There's some language clarification in a number of the different throughout the document, a number of different sections. I think primarily we talked to and highlighted on there, page 2 includes the word elimination under definition property line adjustment. This was, without that word, it was often kind of a confusion, point of contention between the surveyors and planners as regard to lot line adjustment. There's a definition of utility easement. Section 3, one of the other main sections of changes in Section 3, it provides that parcels larger than 80 acres need not be shown on a plat. In Section 4, we'll amend part of ORS 92 such that the public utility provider to certify the approval of the final plat and that the utility easement by abutting in the street. Well, so what you have here, you have a proposed dash one amendments. Excuse me, the dash one amendments delete lines 29 through 32 on page 3. That's the language that's highlighted in bold on that page. And I'm sure the panel will discuss that, but essentially what they're talking about in that section, as I understand it, is it would, before a plat map, as some of you may be aware, the proposed subdivision would get approved by city or county or staff, and then we'll be talking about the plat signing of that plat map. At that point, there are signatures that need to be done from county people, city people, depending on the appropriate one. And this section would require that a public utility easement a person provider would also sign off essentially on that plat map. The dash one amendments would seek to eliminate, delete that section of the bill. And I think the panel will probably will cover some of that. And one of the points of contention on the dash one is that it may in fact be difficult at times to get somebody who may be in a if you're in Burns and you have to get a utility provider who's in Salem, Portland, there may be some difficulty for people to get those signatures. So I think they'll cover the pros and cons, both the dash one and the bill without the dash ones. Representative Greenwick, you're a sponsor of this bill. Do you wish to make a statement?
The only statement I wish to make is that Mr. Gallagher has assured me if there's any question about any of the really complex issues, that he's the one to answer them. So I'm very happy to hand that responsibility.
That's a surprise, Representative. And we'll call forward Tom Gallagher, Don Lynchfield.
Lynchide.
Third time's a charm. And Chuck Pearson again. So, Tom, I'll let you start it off.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Tom Gallagher, representing the Professional Land Surveyors, which is an organization comprised of both the county land surveyors and private land surveyors. And I brought with me my counsel, Art Schlack, who's going to help me with some of the tougher questions that Representative Greenwick has. Let me set this bill out for you on the two surveyors that talk about the technical pieces of it. We do have one amendment and one slight problem with the bill procedurally. We do support the dash one amendments, which would uncomplicate the utility easement process quite a bit, and urge you to adopt those amendments. And secondly, Art has raised and some of the others have raised a potential Measure 37 issue with one of the sections of the bill where we take out 80 acres of unsurveyed property and we take that out of the existing statute. And I think we're going to want to put that back in. So I think there will be a dash 2 amendment that we'll need to get through. But for going through the pieces of the bill, I'll let Chuck Pearson talk about that quickly.
Thank you, Chair Gerard. Members of the committee, again, Chuck Pearson. This is more or less a housekeeping bill. It does a few things that are significant in our eyes, maybe not necessarily in everybody else's eyes. It creates a definition of utility easement, which before this has not been defined. As far as the subdivision of property, it's very important when you put on there that this is a utility easement, what it's specifically for. As Tom indicated, I do support the Dash 1 amendments, which in my written testimony, the second paragraph then would be eliminated.
Page 3, however.
Right. I'm trying to look at my testimony and see if it's making any sense to me. Mr. Schlapp,
this hurts your credibility. You understand that?
I understand that.
Okay.
If I had a computer, I could search for something. Mr. Schlapp this morning brought forward his concern with the other section, and we're certainly willing to work with the planning aspect of this to come up with the appropriate language, and that may include putting that back in. Other than that, it's pretty technical. We have a provision to allow a city to contract with a private surveyor to serve in lieu of the county surveyor when the county surveyor is unable to do the work, as in some of the rural eastern Oregon counties, and would require the concurrence of the county surveyor to just kind of keep a handle on how that work would be done. And I'd be happy to answer any questions that you may have.
We'll wait till the entire panel has completed. Dan?
Chair Gard, members of the committee, I thank you for allowing this testimony. Chuck and I have been serving for, years and years with this joint legislative committee, trying to come up with some fixes that we think we thought were fairly minor and didn't impact much outside of the surveying community. And I guess I'm just here not to cover the same ground again, but just to let you know that I'm in support of this wholeheartedly, and if there's any questions that I can answer, I should be more than happy to. And we're all in support of working together and keep this thing moving.
Okay.
Thank you.
Ms. Schlapp?
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I've sat with the Association of Oregon Counties, and earlier today we raised, at least identified, what we see as an issue with the amendments to Section 6 that's on page 5 of the House Bill 2755. And in that section, there's a removal of the provision that parcels larger than 10 acres or 10 acres or larger that were shown on the final partition plat. These are currently required to be on the plat. They are unsurveyed and marked so on that plat. And if the committee will recall the recent consideration of, I believe, House Bill 2549, the question of lawfully created parcels, the extended an additional lot of record provision. And as we look at Measure 37, lawfully created parcels is a very significant term, and we need to be able to track what is lawfully created through the partitioning, subdivision and partition process. And we have a concern that if these parcels are not identified on the plats, that it removes a primary way of determining that those parcels are lawfully created. And so that's the nature of the concern. We are interested in working with the surveyors to see how best we can address this issue before the bill moves.
Any questions from the committee? Tom, how long would you Chuck and Art need to rework the amendments to make this bill, to make it what you want?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I think that we can do it by next week. So,
if we set another hearing for a week from today?
That would be fine, thank you.
Then will you do so, and I'll ask you gentlemen, this panel, to come back in 1 week with this bill and have it ready for us.
Thank you.
We'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2755 and open a public hearing on House Bill 2643.
Passing the thought. House Bill, Mr. Chairman, Rules of Committee, House Bill 2643 is one which essentially will require local governments to adopt regulations to zone certain forest lands, exclusive farmland, to secondary land. The bill will look through, will require that in the designation of this new zoning class, and a number of most counties have lands which are outside the city limits, which are either agriculture base or forest base or a combination thereof. And so this particular bill sets up definitions for criteria for defining what is a secondary lands, and it looks at the classification of the soils for agricultural lands, or it looks at the soil productivity class for the timberland property. And it has definitions for lot size and for contiguousness of parcels for each one of those categories. Then it also has a provision for also applying for the two marginal lands counties, Lane and Washington County. And then it has some other provisions in there further down, which says that any dwelling that can be, dwellings can be located on what's counties designated secondary lands. There can be divisions of land within those, but it also says that any dwellings can't be put in floodplains and geologic hazard areas, and that they have to meet all fire safety requirements. There's provisions further in the measure that properties which are in agricultural or forest lands are, for the most part, I assume, all getting or eligible to receive special tax assessments because of their resource use of the property, and this will maintain that provision for those properties until there's a change of use on the property that's been established. It has some timelines that are set up that for the state to be able to adopt necessary goals and administrative rules of August 2006, and then it has local governments would also be required to make necessary changes by August of 2007. And then Section 21 near the end stipulates that all the required rules, goals, and regulations are made, that until those are made, that the existing regulations that are in place could not be implemented, enforced, or have any legal effect. So there's an interim window between the passage of this bill in 2006 and 2007 that this bill would say that the provisions of this bill would supersede, I think, essentially, the existing regulations.
Well done.
Thank you.
Dave Honeycutt, we'll let you start it off. In committee, I'll remind you that we're going to stand at ease at approximately 2:20, and those that are signed up to testify, and then we will be, the committee will reconvene at 3 o'clock. Dave, good afternoon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Dave Honeycutt, Oregonians in Action, speaking in support of House Bill 2643. We've talked, or at least I think this is the first time this session I've addressed the committee, so thank you for having me. But I know there's been talk. I've sat in the back and listened and heard talk about what caused people to vote for or against or support 37, and I'm not here to say one way or the other. I think we all have, probably all have a different reason why. But I can tell you that in the decade or so that I've been around this building, the one issue I think that I hear about more than any other, including the right of people to put a home on their property, is the miszoning of rural land. As you've heard Mr. Day testify and as I've testified in past committees, 97% of our privately owned rural land outside of cities is zoned for either farm or forest use, pursuant to, and I think correctly so, pursuant to the definition of agricultural land and forest land in LCDC's goal 3 and 4. If you look at those definitions, you'll see that, for example, in eastern Oregon, agricultural land under LCDC's goal 3 definition is land in class 1 through 6 soils automatically. There are 8 soil types, so this is the first 6 soils. And then other lands that are in class 7 and 8, if they're necessary to permit agricultural practices, taking into consideration a number of different factors. And so what you have, particularly when you get outside of the valley, is situations where there's probably some in just about every one of your districts, situations with the exception probably of Representative Nolan. I don't think she has any farmland in her district, but you get outside of those areas and you stand on this ground and you look at it, and of course nobody's ever tried to farm it, and there's not any trees on it. It just sits there, and it's yet its zone for exclusive farm use, and so I like to say, but for the fact that the sky is blue instead of red, you'd think you were standing on the surface of Mars. And so that, unfortunately, given the breadth of the definition in Goal 3 of agricultural land, that land is correctly zoned. That doesn't mean it's good public policy, however. And so I commend the chair for having a hearing on this bill and addressing this issue. I think this is probably the most vexing issue. I know there's, from folks that have been around a lot longer than I have, this is a debate that's gone on since 1973, and it seems to me is one that we ought to try and solve. And I pledge to you today, without getting into the specifics of the bill, I pledge to you today that I will work with whoever you tell me to, Mr. Chair or the rest of the committee, to try and solve that. I think it's something that we ought to attack this session. The timing is right, given the passage of Measure 37. I think everybody on all sides of the debate will recognize that there is land outside of urban growth boundaries that's been disowned, that we ought to do something, you know, that if we all recognize that there's a problem, then it seems to me that we ought to finally, given the interest in the subject with what happened on November 2nd, use that as a catalyst to try and solve this. We are, however, Mr. Chair, talking about this in Senator Ringo's committee. There was a hearing early on secondary lands. I know that the Senate Chair has expressed an interest in looking at this issue as well, and so I would ask if it's okay with the committee if we'd be given an opportunity to continue to work on that over on the Senate side and bring you back a package for your review at that point. Obviously, whatever the chair's prerogative is, but I think that's something that we have been working on over there, and would be something that I'm hoping that you'll see in this committee in the next month or so. So with that, I'll be more than happy to answer any questions about the specifics of the bill. I hadn't planned on talking about that, just commending the chair and pledging our willingness to work on the issue.
Any comments from the committee?
I think in response to your comments about the Senate, this committee has been extremely patient, sitting here for 2.5 months waiting for something to come from the Senate. However, nothing has arrived yet. So our patience is wearing thin. We will honor your request and give this a little bit of time, but if we don't see something within a reasonable amount of time, and I'm talking about maybe in the next couple of weeks, then we will pick up this mantle on this secondary lands issue and try to move forward with it. Would that meet with your approval?
That would
Absolutely, Mr. Chair. I'll do whatever the committee and whatever the chair instructs. This is an issue, as I said earlier. It's really something that we ought to address now. And it's going to be hard because people have staked out positions on this issue, or my organization included. And it's going to be hard to get, you know, to move people off their platforms on the issue. But it really is something I think that we ought to address.
The clock is ticking. We know the Senate committees are scheduled to be closed down April 28th, so that's a 4 weeks from now. So
absolutely.
We need to leave ourselves enough time that we can properly address this issue, because it is a significant issue in land use in Oregon. So
yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Harrica. Lane Shetterly. I'm trying to do you a favor, Lane. You can keep it to 10 minutes so I can get you back to work.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do appreciate that. For the record, Lane Shetterly, Director of the Department of Land Conservation and Development. Although, Mr. Chair, I do consider this part of my work, so I consider myself happily engaged even while I'm sitting and listening to the testimony. I want to echo especially the last part of Dave Honeycutt's testimony, and I'm pleased to say that on that point in terms of discussions in the Senate, we are engaged in those as well. And as with other issues, this committee has addressed in terms of law of record and the $80,000 income test, believe that there is a place for this in the larger discussions around ballot measure 37. And, Mr. Chair, we will continue to engage in the Senate and work with Dave and the others in those negotiations. So I'll pledge to you our good faith effort to bring to you a package as well that addresses these and the other issues that your committee has been looking at. I will leave with you for your information just a review that Ron Eber prepared for the Senate committee that I asked him to revise for today's testimony. It's just for your information. It's a history of the secondary lands, and it is a long and sordid history in fits and starts over the last couple of decades. I think that would inform the committee's discussion and deliberation on this issue if this bill should come back up for any further consideration. I would say that as a standalone bill, if again we are hopeful to incorporate this in a larger address of the ballot measure 37 issues, as a standalone we would be opposed to it. We know that ballot measure 37 will have significant impacts on the landscape, and I mean the landscape of Oregon. If you add cumulatively the potential impacts of this bill, of a bill you heard on Monday relating to the classification of lands, specifically the $80,000 income test, lot of record, it's the cumulative impact of those could be, well, they're unknown. And I think that's my point on these bills as standalone issues, that until the dust settles from ballot measure 37, short of a comprehensive address of the issues, I would disagree with Dave on that point, that this is not the time to be moving these bills as discrete bills until we really do have a sense of what the full impact of ballot measure 37 is going to be on the landscape. But having said that, again, my hope is, and I'm an inveterate optimist, that discussions will proceed apace and that we will be able to bring you something that will take into account these considerations and others that your committee has looked at in addressing ballot measure 37, really for the good of all our Romans.
Any questions of Mr. Shirley? Representative Christie's objection, Mr. Chairman. I have questions about the bill, but it would be your preference to just hold that off until we work out the calculus on how measure 37 gets to us.
Well, I have to confess that I'm somewhat disappointed in Mr. Shetterly's approach to this issue, and that I don't think the world needs to come to an end because of measure 37. There are other issues, and I believe secondary lands is a very significant one that needs to be addressed. But I think Representative Ackerman brings up a good point. Is now the time, or should we wait to see? And I think we've already agreed that we probably should wait before we really dive into this and give Senator Ringo and his Senate colleagues an opportunity to respond to this, and then we can respond to that. So if the committee agrees with that position, any discussion?
Okay. Okay. Thank you very much.
Then we'll relieve you of those questions, Len.
Yes, we do.
The rest of you that were signed up to talk on this particular bill, I would ask at this point, does anyone still feel they'd like to come forward? Since we're really going to kind of put it on the back burner for a couple of weeks, does anyone still wish to go on record? You got 5 minutes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I believe I can hold it to that. Don Schoenberg, representing the Oregon Farm Bureau. I spent significant amounts of time in 1988, 1989, and again in 1991, 1992, trying to help craft a secondary lands provision. That issue in itself is just as complicated, time-consuming, and controversial as Measure 37 issue. The big issue for Farm Bureau at the time was that secondary lands not be spot zoned, but rather that they be areas with a minimum of 640 acres of poor quality land with a minimum lot size of not less than 20 acres. We had policy so stating that condition. The secondary lands are really nothing more than non-farm dwellings in a farm zone, which Farm Bureau opposes, and the identification of the land quality to which it applies was a major contention. What was then considered for secondary lands is now the most expensive land for the production of wine grapes. In the mid-1990s, the Oregon Farm Bureau did a complete review and rewrite of our land use policies. We concluded that there is no such thing as secondary lands because all lands are productive and removed any reference to it from our policy. What there is are areas of excellent farmland and some areas of lesser quality farmland, excellent rangeland, lesser quality rangeland, and non-resource land. Now, the latter category is already available in today's land use planning provisions, and more than 50,000 acres in about five counties have been so designated and approved by LCDC. The reason that those lands were designated as EFU was because the definition of agricultural land under Goal 3 is very broad and general. And there I would have to agree with Mr. Hunnicutt in his testimony regarding the definition of agricultural land in Goal 3. We still believe that EFU zones need to be large areas in which there will likely be some smaller acreages of non-resource lands. Every farm and every EFU zone has those. You just have to use them the best you can and move on. Farm Bureau strongly suggests that a critical review of the Goal 3 definition of farmland would be more productive and would produce a better result than once again entering that black hole of secondary lands. I'm reminded of when my kids were very small, I used to read them Brer Rabbit and Brer Bear. And Brer Rabbit, he always wanted to be thrown in the briar patch, you know. No, don't throw me in the briar patch, he'd always say. Well, I'm saying don't throw me in the briar patch, but I'm not saying because he knew he could get out of it. I'm saying because I don't want to go there again. So I would strongly urge you not to consider the secondary lines at this point. Wait again for the Senate, for sure, but more importantly, let the LCDC take another look at that definition of agricultural land. I think we can resolve it that way much easier. Thank you.
Any questions, Mr. Schellenberg? Seeing none. Art?
Mr. Chair, thank you. Art Slack with the Association of Oregon Counties, and let me be very brief. One, we appreciate the Chair bringing this bill forward. I wouldn't feel that this was a session without at least some discussion of secondary lands, and my first session here was 1993, so it's been around for a while. All counties will, I think, recognize that there are some lands that have been misplanned and miszoned that are in currently an exclusive farm use or forest zone. The question is, what's the process and how do we take another look at that to pull some of those out and how much? And that is the crux of the issue at this point. And what, you know, what kind of process do we do? This is one proposal. It may be the best proposal. I think, you know, and we're committed to work with the Chair and other people to look at, you know, how we can best do that. I want to raise one concern with regard to this bill, the way it's drafted, and that is there is a mandate that counties, based on criteria, go do work within a specific amount of time. The way this is laid out, there is a substantial financial burden on counties to do this work, and I would suggest it is an unfunded mandate under Measure 30. There may be ways of addressing that issue at this point, but I want to put that on the record, and if the legislature wants counties to do that, then I would hope they would appropriate funds that would support counties doing that work within the specified time. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yes. Chair Gerard,
can you do it in a couple of members?
Yes.
Okay.
Very shortly here. I just wanted to say that the Oregon State Grange has specific policy concerning secondary lands. They state we favor, I'm Jim Wells, who represent the Oregon State Grange, lobbyist for Oregon State Grange. Sorry about that, didn't introduce myself. We favor the Oregon State Grange, speaking here, establishment of definite criteria that clearly and properly defines and identifies what constitutes secondary lands as applied to forestry and agriculture lands. And we appreciate the fact that you brought this piece of legislation forward, and I know it's Oregon's and Action's 1990s bill that we worked on, and the Oregon State Grange had policy and this established policy clear back in 1990. So you can see how long that even this agriculture-based organization, fraternal organization, the Oregon State Grange, has felt there have been zoned and classified lands in the forest and farmland areas. And we think there's some things that can be done here. We hope the work committee over in the Senate will do some good things there. We're at the mercy, certainly, of, I think, of Oregonians in Action. That's fine. And the realtors and Thousand Friends of Farm Bureau, Thousand Friends and Farm Bureau. And not any blemish on my friend Don, because we've had arguments over this for years. But we think that secondary lands could be very helpful to a state, an economy, certainly in forest and farmland. My wife and I live on that type of land. We have honored the fact that it is forest land. We raise trees, has paid our taxes for 25 years, and we carved out a small footprint on 5 acres for our house and for a garden, and we still harvest trees. And it has paid for those taxes all those years. And I still have, $30,000 to $50,000 worth of trees left on there. That should carry me to 6 feet under in property taxes. So you see, we can do a number of things out there. It doesn't have to be farm and forestry. And we can live on small parcels and still honor the fact of farm and forestry. And certainly the Grange does believe there is a reason to protect farm and forest lands, but there are misclassified, miszoned lands within those areas that we need to do something about and kick this economy in the state back out on the main road. Thank you.
George Pani and Ruan Asser are both going to speak. We are going to adjourn till 3 o'clock if you would both like to speak.
George,
thank you, and you're certainly welcome back when this bill comes back up again, and you will be given a priority in speaking. Elon, would you feel the same way?
Yeah.
Okay, we appreciate that. So we will close the public hearing on House Bill 2643 in committee. Seeing no further business, we will adjourn for the day.